The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Subscribe to the podcast. Remember, it runs twice a week. You can listen at iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, and right here at JoeBucksFan.com. Subscribe for that free alert, and then you get notified whenever the podcast pops. So kick back, enjoy the show. Here's Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Happy Tuesday, Bucks fans. We're here with the latest edition of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. You're listening to the Southern Illinois twang, the stuttering twang, the nasal twang of Lee Decamper. Steve Nisbet's the normal host, the professional voice, is incapacitated today. Let's just say he's on assignment. That sounds good. And, of course, it's the sage of Tampa Bay sports. It's the king of Newport, Richie. It's the custodian of Canton. It's Ira Kaufman. Ira, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Lee. I'm very happy to put Sunday's game in the rearview mirror. That game might have set football back a decade or two. Look, they say a win's a win's a win. The three-game losing streak's over. The bleeding has stopped. But, Lee, let's be brutally honest, as we always are on this podcast. The Bucks got to play a lot better than that. They got to play a lot better than that. There's 10 games left. They want to avoid going 3-7 or 4-6 the rest of the way. They gotta raise their game, man. It's not like Cleveland brought their A game. They showed grit, Cleveland, because they were getting their heads pounded. Through three quarters, it wasn't much of a contest. The Bucks dominated, despite losing the turnover battle. All of a sudden, fourth quarter, Lee, I don't know if you noticed, I dug up a little original research, which you like.
You bring the juice.
They had 7 first downs going into the fourth quarter. They got 10 in the fourth quarter. 10. And scored 2 touchdowns. I'm not going to put the onus on the Bucs' defensive effort because overall, I thought it was much improved. That was the story of the game. Pass rush, much improved. Coverage, much improved. Guess what? Those two go hand in hand. It's easier to stay close to guys when you know the guy's got to get the ball out. And there's a rookie quarterback. But Lee, the Bucs were sloppy. Sloppy. They made a lot of their own mistakes. Make that 40-yard field goal, young man. Make that extra point, young man. Jameis, stop zeroing in on a receiver and throwing it right to a guy who's dropping back into coverage. So, Lee, look, Jameis Winston's had no, I wouldn't say fan, but a supporter of you. Every time I try to throw out that he better not go 4-8 and 12 starts, you say, Ira, he's not responsible if they give up 40 points. And that point, I can't argue against that point. But Lee didn't have an exceptional game.
No.
I thought he did more damage with his legs than his arm yesterday.
I don't know if I'd go there, but I'll certainly say he was terrible in overtime. I thought he had a good first half. Cutter said he had a great start to the game. He had a terrible overtime. And that interception, it was a terrible game by the Bucks. It was a sloppy game by the Bucks. But then again, look at that defense. Like, whoa, where'd this come from? Was it all because of Mike Smith? I don't know if that's accurate or not. But the defense saved Jameis' bacon yesterday. A couple times. They saved Jameis'
bacon. And we don't say that around here too often.
I can't remember ever saying that. The defense saved O.J. Howard's bacon. That third down pass, can't blame Jameis on that. It was right there. 3rd and 3 from the 45. That would have been a first down. Rare drop by O.J. Went through his hands. And he told me after the game, he took his eye off the ball. And on replays, you can't tell that. But he said, hey, I took my eyes off the ball. No one was happier in the den of depression than O.J. Howard that defense had that goal line stand. That saved the Bucks. That saved O.J. Howard. O.J. Howard would have been the GOAT because he had that. He had a first down conversion right there in his hands. So I can't blame Jameis on that. But Jameis, I got to be honest. He had a terrible overtime. And we talked about this prior to the recording this. That game reminded you, and it reminded me, of the overtime loss to the Raiders. That was another sloppy game. Yeah, and you brought up how many penalties the Browns had. Well, that game, how many penalties the Raiders had?
The Raiders set an NFL record. I think it was 23.
Yeah, it was just both teams. It should have been a tie. Neither one deserved it. It had everything you want in a rotten game. Flags, drops, terrible play. My gosh.
One aspect of the game I thought was particularly disappointing. Peyton Barber had a very good game in Atlanta. Best game of the year. Bucks ran the ball well. And they come out against the Browns. And, you know, the Browns' defense is decent. Barber couldn't get anything going. Without Winston's, 50, 55 yards on the ground, it would have been a terrible rushing day for the Bucks. Winston threw 50-plus passes. It's not a good formula, Lee. when the Bucks throw 40 or more passes, I think they had won two games in 5 years coming into yesterday. Well, they managed to win yesterday's. Despite losing the turnover battle, which Cutter says is the number one factor in determining games, let's talk about some of the things they did well. Lee, they minimized explosive plays by the Browns. Granted, it was a rookie quarterback, but they kept everything in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the pass rush, Lee, I would like to salute the Buck defensive staff for listening to Joe Buck's fan, who has been screaming, me in particular, move JPP around.
Yeah.
Move him around. And you know what? A lot of times yesterday, now maybe it was because McCoy wasn't playing, I understand, but he was playing defensive tackle.
Yeah.
And doing it very well. He's a wrecking crew from the middle, besides being at right end. And that allowed a little guy named Noah Spence to get back in the lineup. I think he only took 9 snaps, Lee, but it's a start. And I talked to him. He was giddy. The man's giddy after the game. Hey, I knew this day was coming. I kept my hopes up. I never got too depressed. He credited his teammates. He credited his family. He said, I knew God's plan was I'd get back in there. One day we'll tell the full Noah Spence story about what happened, why he can't beat out, until yesterday, a guy that just got bumped up from the practice squad.
Yeah,
this guy's a former, high pick. But pass rush was strong, Lee. Mayfield deposited on his keister 5 times.
When's the last time the Bucks had 5 sacks?
And he spun out of a couple others. I remember one time JPP had him dead to rights.
Yeah.
So, Lee, I think you'd agree with me that that double-digit thing that we've talked about, you know, going back to Simeon Rice. I forgot the year. Maybe 2005, something like that. Looks like that streak's going to end because JPP's going to get it.
He's still on pace for 16 sacks.
Which is
hard to believe with the Bucks. I mean, that's almost something otherworldly.
And Lee, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention this. We don't have to harp on it, but we have to mention it. They just got 5 sacks without Gerald McCoy being out there. Defense played well without Gerald McCoy being out there. That doesn't mean Gerald McCoy is not a nice player. Doesn't mean that. But I think that's a film that the Bucks might go back to when they're trying to decide Gerald McCoy's future with this organization.
Well, that crossed my mind. I have to admit that crossed my mind. And I'm a Gerald supporter. I'm a firm believer in you don't get rid of good players. And I've yet to find anybody in the NFL that will tell me Gerald's not a good player. I go to the combine. I talk to NFL people for a whole week. I go to the Super Bowl media day. I talk to NFL people there. When I say NFL people, I'm talking suits, talking coaches, talking coordinators. I have yet to find anybody to say, which a lot of Bucks fans do, that McCoy's a rotten player. Now, I'm not all Bucks fans, but there's a vocal minority, if you want to call it. I don't know, but
and you feel, a vocal you feel, and you feel the same way about Jameis Winston?
Absolutely. The Bucks are, and I say this over and over, it's a hallmark franchise for getting rid of good players. Just look at the good players they've gotten rid of in the last 6 years. Just, tossed aside. They're still starting in the NFL, or they started for Super Bowl teams.
By the way, you know who's making a name for himself? I'm going to throw a name out, a blast from the future.
Mason Foster?
DJ Swearinger.
Yeah.
He's playing good football.
He was a good football player. He was with the Bucks, but lovey for whatever reason. He can't play for me. Then he goes to the Redskins, and he did well for himself.
McDougal's not playing bad with the Seahawks. At safety.
Yeah,
Bradley McDougal.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's doing okay. Pete Carroll seems to know what he's doing. LeGarrette Blount, obvious. Revis, obvious.
Michael Bennett, of course.
Don't get me started. So, McCoy will never be Sapp, and I think that works against him with so many Bucks fans. Sapp set the standard, and anybody that's not Sapp is garbage. Well, that's not correct. Sapp is just that much better. An anomaly, in a sense. Didn't he have 16 sacks one year? Which I don't think we'll ever see that again in our lifetime.
Defensive player of the year.
I don't know if Aaron Donald will do that. And so that works against McCoy. But you know what? The Bucks, sooner or later, are going to start watching their nickels. They've got a lot of guys to pay. Jameis potentially included. So they're going to start cutting corners, right? But watching their nickels.
Don't forget, Lee, along those lines, they've spent 3 or 4 years not paying a quarterback. That really helps you with the salary cap.
That's going to change.
That's going to change.
Yeah. So, and they seem, the Bucks had their best defensive out, by far, their best defensive ever. By far this year. Not even close. I mean, they're giving up 400 yards every stinking game until yesterday. 305. Big difference.
In overtime.
In overtime, too, yes. So, if you're an accountant, you're like, wait a minute. This team played pretty darn good defense without a guy making $10 million a year. And we got to pay Jameis, we got to pay Donovan Smith, We got to pay Kwan potentially his knee. Unfortunately, it's sad to see.
Well, we got to see if it continues. It's only one game.
Yes, exactly. It could be a fluke. We don't know that. That just gave firewood to all the anti-McCoy people out there. Like, what are you paying him for? You play better defense without him. So that's going to be an issue, certainly coming forward. And but the thing about the Bucs defense, the pass rush. Like I said, when's the last time they had 5 sacks in a game?
The best player on the field yesterday might have been the seed.
Not only that, and we, you know, sacks, but he also dropped back in pass coverage
and he was
made
right
a play.
On the guy.
Yeah. So you're exactly right. You know what, Ira? We're going to continue with Bucs talk, but I'm going to pull a Johnny Carson here. We're going to continue with the Bucs talk.
Carol Wayne for Tea Time Movies.
Speaking of blasting
band,
but as Johnny Carson would say, we have an important message to listen to, and we'll be right back after this important message from one of our proud sponsors.
You can't lose during the Big Win Sales event at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. General Manager Brian Danahy has your chance now to lease Escalades just $7.89 a month. Get to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, for your chance to win big. Visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com to shop online immediately. EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. The dealer has all the offer details on the Escalades. And of course, Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October means Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa is giving proceeds from every vehicle sold to My Hope Chest, a wonderful charity that helps breast cancer survivors. EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, you know Ira was just there hanging out with John Cooper. They are on Causeway Boulevard, just east of 75. That's Hillsborough County's other Cadillac dealership. There's only two. They have 2019 Cadillac XT4s now in stock and ready for immediate delivery. Fantastic crossover. You see the ad on JoeBucksFan.com. Get yourself to EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com and start your shopping search there. We so appreciate the support of Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, who present all of Ira's work, his 3 columns on JoeBucksFan.com every week, his podcasts, and you can always see Ira around town wearing his Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon gear. Thank you, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon.
Now, Ira, we're back. But the defense yesterday was really, really something. When's the last time we had 5 sacks, saw 5 sacks in the game? I can't remember one. Talk about the Nassib, for example. Fine game he had.
Well, that's Nassib's moment in the sun. It may never happen again. But when that locker room door opened, here comes the media, and who are they looking for? They're looking for Nassib. That's who they're looking for. He kept us waiting about 15 minutes when he got dressed. But, you know, that's fine. The guy played a whale of a game. As you mentioned, not only the 2 sacks, but he dropped back into coverage. He covered the guy like a blanket. I thought it was Patrick Peterson over there on the left sideline and deflected the ball away. That pass had no chance to be complete. He was that close to the intended target. I saw Jason Pierre-Paul operating from the inside. He's a wrecking crew from in there. And as a result, and it really benefited the coverage, but let's give Duffner his due in terms of this marked improvement we saw on the defense. First of all, through 3 quarters, Cleveland did nothing. Absolutely nothing. They had 7 first downs, a buck 20 in yards. Mayfield was doing absolutely nothing out there. Maybe they wilted a little bit, the Bucs, in the fourth quarter. 10 first downs by the Browns. That's not acceptable. It's not acceptable. 14 points. I thought the Bucs had this game totally in hand.
Yeah.
But one thing Buck fans have learned, it never happens. It's never easy. Being a Buck fan, I remember, you know, when my San Francisco Giants were winning World Series, Bruce Boch, they used to win games 2-1 every night. 2-1, 3-2. That helped them when they get to the postseason.
Sure.
During those tight games. So Bochy, you know, labeled, he goes, Giants baseball, you know, torture. He called it torture. Sometimes watching these Buck games are torture, and I don't just mean the 48-10 in Chicago. This game was well in hand. Late, the Browns are down and out. They're making penalties left and right. They look like the old they did look like the old Browns for 3 quarters.
Oh my gosh, that was such a sloppy game. You know, yeah,
they didn't look like the Browns who tied Pittsburgh and should have beat Oakland and already has 2 wins. The Browns have been very competitive this year. Duffner Lee, in my opinion, challenged the secondary. Instead of just being in the linebacker room, now his duties have expanded. His focus has expanded. He's in the secondary room, and he sat down MJ Stewart and Justin Evans and Carlton Davis and Brent Grimes and Whitehead and said, guys, we have been embarrassed for five games. Guys are catching the ball, and Buck fans are looking at the TV, and they don't see a defender on the screen. Julio Jones, where's the defender? Michael Thomas, what'd he catch, 15, 17 balls? I mean, that's remember week one?
Yeah.
It was absolutely crazy. Yeah. We were in the press box saying, that's all they got.
Yeah, stop him.
And on Sunday, Lee, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say they contested virtually every pass.
Yeah.
And if a guy makes a great catch, you tip your hat and you go on to the next play. But it's unacceptable when there's nobody around the ball. That's what Buck fans go crazy about.
Yeah.
And justifiably. So I thought the compete level was much, much higher on Sunday. Now, granted, it wasn't Drew Brees and Thomas. It wasn't Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. Heck, it wasn't even Matt Ryan and Julio Jones.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rookie quarterback and Jarvis Landry, you know, who's a nice little possession receiver. But he's not a burner, you know, that you're going to worry about. But I thought the compete level, that was my takeaway from the game. Part of it's a better pass rush lead, but not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of it. The coverage was a lot better. Don't give up a 9-yard pass on third and eight and give a guy a 12-yard cushion. Buck fans go crazy over that, and justifiably so. That's not winning football.
No.
That's not competing football. So I like the compete level on Sunday.
Well, what's not winning football, we'll get to in our third and last segment. But I wonder, Ira, and I've been a Gerald McCoy supporter. I've yet to, you know, I go to the combine, I've talked to NFL people for a whole week. I can't find anybody that thinks McCoy's a bad player. I go to the Super Bowl media week. I talk to coordinators. They're the same way. McCoy's a game record. Got a game plan against McCoy, otherwise you get buried. But there's a lot of Bucs fans out there. They think Gerald McCoy is a nothing. They don't like his personality. They think he drags the team down. He's the face of losing, which I can understand why that would aggravate people, because the Bucs have lost a whole lot more than they've won, with McCoy being the self-determined leader of the defense. But here the Bucs by far had their best defensive effort of the season. Not even close. And no McCoy. And they have five sacks. Could this possibly be the beginning of the end for McCoy? Just from an accounting standpoint, like, wait a minute here. You guys played the best defense of the year, and a $10 million man was on the sidelines?
Lee, there's no question that the game tape from Sunday's matchup is going to give the Buck haters a little ammunition. There's no question about it. Can it sustain? We don't know, especially with Quan Alexander going down. We don't know that, but the pass rush was a heck of a lot better. It was a lot better. Now, the Browns' offensive line's not that good. Mayfield's a rookie. He doesn't have the pocket presence he might have in about 2 years down the line. Although I think he's going to be good at Mayfield. I wasn't unimpressed with Mayfield. I don't think he's got a lot to work with. But pass rush a lot better. I didn't think Vita Vea was a major contributor. I wouldn't say that.
But he made a tackle that was a hell of a play where he ran like 10, 12 yards down the field and tackled the guy.
It was nice to see Noah Spence get some snaps in, albeit nine snaps.
You spoke with him?
I spoke with him. He was giddy. He said that his teammates, coaches, and family kept him going, wouldn't let him get too depressed. And he said it was God's will. I knew I was going to get another opportunity. I want to see more of him. Mm-hmm. He's coming off the left edge. I think he's more suited to the right edge.
I think you're right.
I think he's more suited.
I believe so.
So they put him on the left side yesterday. Look, to your main point, Lee, they played markedly better defense, and 93 wasn't in the lineup. I'm not ready to say, and I don't think you are either, that there's no coincidence to that. And that's the reason, you know, they're better off without McCoy. You're not saying that.
No.
What you're saying is value.
Yeah.
You got to put a value on a player.
Exactly.
And he's making a lot of money. He's not getting any younger. And, it's not like he's approaching his prime or anything. They've done a lot of losing with him. It's not McCoy's fault.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's a fact. So they drafted Vita Vea for a reason in the first round. He's going to be McCoy's eventual replacement. We don't know when that time is, but games like yesterday kind of accelerate that process, I think.
Yeah, and you know, I hate to see him go, because I'm a firm believer in you don't let good players go. And one reason why the Bucs have been stinking the last couple years, I don't know if there's any team in the NFL that has let so many good players go. Just go. They just cut them. Just like, you know, get out of here. Goodbye. They don't get anything for them. I mean, we could start with Revis. All people will scream about Revis. But I remember him getting a ring starting for Bill Belichick. But he wasn't good enough for Lovey, but he was good enough for Belichick. And then, of course, there's LeGarrette Blount. Then, of course, there's McDougal, which you talked about, who's playing with the Redskins, doing a good job.
The Seahawks.
Well, okay, he's with the Seahawks.
And Bennett, of course, Bennett.
Oh, who's the guy with the Redskins, the safety?
Well, now you got DJ Swearingen. Swearingen. He's making a name for himself.
Yeah. I mean, we can go on and on and on. And so I'm a firm believer, like I am with Jameis, you don't get rid of good players unless you can replace them. And right now, I don't see anybody replacing McCoy. We'll get to the offense in a second.
The question is, can they sustain that kind of a defensive effort without Kwon? Who through the player vote for captain is now reaffirmed that he is the pulse of that defense.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's any question about
it. And people call him the Jameis of the defense, Chris Patch. I'm going to ask you about Kwon in a second here, but before that, did Noah Spence have anything to say about Duffman?
Yes, he did. He said he's a big fan of Coach Duffner's, and just from his body language, I think he feels he's got a new lease on life.
Okay.
With Duffner calling the shots.
Okay, I was wondering about that because I don't know if it was because of the injuries that Spence was playing or because, you know, new man in charge on defense. One thing I will say about the defense that I don't know if you heard this. I heard this, and I'd like to confirm it. I talked to Duffner, but I didn't hear it from Duffner. Mike Smith was always, oh, the communications are bad. Communications are bad. Communications are bad. One of these days, I'm gonna blow the whistle. I know what the communications are. It's not inaccurate, but it's like so vague. It's like saying the sky is white when you're actually talking about a star 100 million or so miles away. You know, very, very vague.
One thing MJ Stewart said yesterday, and he played well, Lee. After the game, I cornered him, and I asked him about Duffner and the new voice in the room. Here's the phrase he used, and I think you've heard it too. He simplified things.
I've heard that.
He simplified things. If Duffner did nothing else,
mm-hmm.
That's an accomplishment.
Well, I think it was Rock Riley that, you know, at halftime we're up in the press box, and you could set your watch by it. You see Dave Moore, who's an analyst on the Bucks Radio Network during games, he's a game analyst, makes a beeline to the restroom. Because he's only got so many seconds to take care of business, so to speak. And as Dave Moore was making a beeline, Rock Riley cornered him quickly and said, what do you see different with the defense?
Is this before or after he went to take a pee?
It's before.
Before.
Well, on his way there.
So he wasn't going to get too long with the guy.
Exactly. Right. He knew better.
And what did he say?
They simplified the defense. And Dave Moore could see that.
That's
from
what
upstairs.
He said from the press box.
Yeah. Dave Moore could see that up in his perch, up in the broadcast booth. He could see it with his own eyes. They simplified the defense. That's what he told Rock Riley. So, but to the simplifying the defense and the communication issue, like I said, I can't spill the beans, but I know exactly what it is, but I'm not going to embarrass people, put people in bad light. However, I had heard that Duffner put both the linebackers and the secondary in the same meeting room this week.
Outstanding, Coach Duffner. Outstanding.
Yeah.
Smart.
So, in other words,
so
you weren't
separate. We're all in this together. We're all in
same page. You're in the same room. There's no separate room for the defensive line, although there was. No separate room for the linebackers, no separate room for the secondary. Secondary and the linebackers are all in the same room.
Now, one of the other things, Lee, that you know, I'm sure you've noticed, too, in the first five games, time and again, teams were able to dictate the matchups that they wanted, and they got them all the time where you got the linebacker trying to cover the running back. And the guy's woefully, you know, outmanned.
Yeah.
He's outgunned. I didn't see that much.
No, he's not. No.
I didn't see it.
No.
And, you know, the Browns looked at the game films. They wanted to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see where all of a sudden the Bucks were in a totally defensive posture. You know, do with us what you want. And we'll do the best we can. it looked different.
It sure did. It looked like it looked organized. It looked like they had a purpose. And I think they were motivated, too, because I had more than a couple players say that when the news came that Smith was fired, that got their attention. Like, whoa, this is huge. You know, a veteran coach, a former head coach, one of Dirk Cutter's best friends, and they got rid of Mike Smith. Am I next? That really got people's attention. Kwon, you know, obviously, I'm going to say this real quick. It looked frightening. It looked scary on the field. The scene, I know TV went to commercial. Both teams, both offensive and defensive players, when Kwon was on the ground, both teams were out on the field. Guys were kneeling. Guys had their head in their hands. It looked scary. And like you mentioned before this podcast, looked like I thought maybe he had a compound fracture. Guys were shaking. What do you think about Kwan's future with the Bucks? Obviously, it looks like he's going to be out for the year. As we're recording this, we don't know the specifics, so we can only guess. You know, there's been a report. It's blown ACL. Again, the way people reacted on social media, the players, his teammates, I didn't see that with McCoy. Last night on social media, Instagram and Twitter, his teammates were all over the place. Even Miko Grimes chimed in.
McCoy's injury wasn't as bad. It was a calf.
They knew he was coming back. But what do you make of his future with the Bucks?
Even in a worst-case scenario, Lee, with the MRI results, I don't see any reason why a young player like Alexander, who's going to do everything in his power to get back sooner rather than later, I don't see any reason why this should affect them in 2019. The problem is they got 10 weeks left in this year. They hope to make some noise. They're at 3-3. They're not in a hole. And it's going to be very difficult to do without Kwan Alexander, especially against the run, Lee. And they're going on a road, the Bengals and the Panthers. Now, look, the Bengals didn't show it in Kansas City. They were hopelessly outgunned and fell behind. And, Marvin Lewis is the balance went out the window. You know, you got to throw 50 times at that point. And it still didn't work. But next week, assuming the game's close, Joe Mixon is a pretty good running back. And the Bengals got a good offensive line. We know about Carolina with McCaffrey. They like to run the ball. They're one of the few teams that don't throw the ball 40 times a game. Cam Newton doesn't do that normally. Mm-hmm. That's not Ron Rivera's style. He likes, 30, 35 mix and a lot of runs. So it's going to test the Bucs' rushing defense. That unit's held up well, rushing defense, although Chubb had some success, especially after Alexander went out.
Yes.
So,
and look, Duke Johnson, too.
It's complicated because you got the extension for Kwan Alexander hanging over his head. I'm sure he's thinking about that. While he's doing his rehab, he'll be thinking about that. But I fully expect the Bucks to show him the money and for him to be back next year. The problem is going on the rest of this season, possibly, without him. It's a crippling blow.
Immediately, people are asking about Kendall Beckwith. They were asking over last night on Twitter. What about Beckwith?
I still think he's a couple of weeks away.
I talked to him a week and a half ago, and his situation had not changed. He hasn't been cleared by medical staff to start practicing. So the way I look at it is, now I'm not saying this is going to happen, but my mentality, until I actually see him on the field, I'm not expecting him on the field. So, I mean, he's the logical guy to go play middle linebacker and replace Kwan.
I don't think the Bucs will rush him back necessarily.
No, they won't.
But this puts an onus on getting him back on the field, a little more pressure.
Yeah, and I will say this. I'll repeat a one-liner I had. I think it was last week. When you say onus, the way the defense played before Sunday, it rhymed with onus. With that, we'll talk about offense.
I got a new shirt on Sunday.
You got a new shirt?
Scott Smith got me a Fox 13 shirt.
Oh, really?
And I had a sports coat to wear on the tailgate show, and we were sitting on a field, with Scott Smith. And,
pleasant weather.
And Smith says, take off your sports coat. I go, wait a minute, I picked this out special. And I put on the back of the chair, and they wanted to show the logo. They wanted to show the Fox 13 logo.
Oh, okay. So, you're part of their family then.
So, I proudly wear my Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, and I got all kinds of colors. I got all kinds of hats. And so I'm a walking advertisement, my man.
Well, you know what?
If it's free, it's me. That's my motto.
Well, that's why you enjoyed lunch at Port Richey Hooters, because I bought it for you.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah, we got to give a shout out to Hooters, our famous eatery. We love them so much, and they have always helped. Been a good fan of and a good friend of Joe and JoeBucksFan.com.
Trying to get the waitress on the podcast, but she's resisting us.
Yeah, for whatever reason, they won't go on the podcast. Their parents. I mean, I don't know what that is.
She might want to weigh in on Kwan Alexander. I mean,
Well, you know what? We got to talk about your appearances. You said Channel 13, tailgate Sunday, every Sunday before the Bucks game. And that does not include your appearance with Chris Risso, the Mad Dog, and Mad Dog Radio, SiriusXM.
Wednesday at 5.
And you're periodically on Rock Riley's show, usually on Friday afternoons on WHBO.
And we got
1270
Spectrum on Bay News.
Or 1040.
Spectrum, Bay News 9, Wednesday evening, a little debate. It's only 2 minutes, but it's a debate. I'm sure we'll be talking about the Bucks this week. So, and I do the Derek Brooks The Identity, Tampa,
too. We cannot forget about our good friends with the Identity, Tampa Bay.
Derek Brooks, who called Sunday's game a must-win.
Well, you know what? He wasn't the only one. Apparently, that got Dirk Cutter's attention. He talked about that in post-game press conference. I think it was Rick Stroud that asked him about, do you think this is a must-win? And he looked right at him and smiled. He goes, oh, I read your story. You guys made the point abundantly clear.
Lee, they did stop the bleeding. They didn't do it overly impressively. So what's your confidence level going forward?
I don't know what to think after that game yesterday. I don't know what to think. You know, especially me, and you've mentioned how it was a sloppy game. I wrote on Twitter they didn't deserve to win.
You said the game deserved to end in a tie.
Yeah, because both teams are playing so terribly. But as soon as I say that, I have to realize the defense had by far their best game of the year. And the defense won the game for the Bucs. I don't think there's any question about it. That defense won the game. That defense bailed out the offense. You know, poor O.J. Howard. That pass went through his hands, 3rd and 3 on the 45, I believe, in the fourth quarter. That would have been a first down conversion. Defense bailed him out because that turned it into the goal line stand where the Bucs rode the boat like P.J. Fleck. They rode the boat. I like that. But
Lee, they're getting killed on the turnover margin. I believe it's now -9. I mean, that's usually a sign of a loser.
Unsustainable. That's one of your favorite
minus
words.
-9, Lee.
I know, that's bad. I think it's accurate to say...
Part of it is they're not getting enough takeaways. Part of it.
Yeah,
I'm going to put it all on the offense.
Yeah. And up until yesterday, they didn't have a turnover. Lavonnie David had the forced fumble.
They still have one interception on the season.
Mm-hmm, that's not good. I think it's fair to say, and I'm not in this boat, whatever. I'm just the opposite. Jameis is not a popular player right now. There's quite a few Bucs fans, they want to turn the page on Jameis. Well, you know what?
They want to bring back Fitzpatrick.
Which is insane. When people say Fitzpatrick should be starting and not Jameis, that just tells me they've never seen Fitzpatrick play. That tells me they don't know what they're talking about. No one in their right mind would say that. I mean, even Derek Cutter said, we didn't bring Fitzpatrick in to start. We brought him in to back up. I mean, you want to cite Jameis' turnovers? How about 3 picks in a row against the Steelers? Good grief. But Jameis is not popular right now. A lot of people want to move on from Jameis. And I'm of the opinion... To quote Raheem Morris, and you say it's a Tomlin quote. I never heard Tomlin say it. I did hear Raheem say it. I'll tolerate you until I can replace you.
That's classic Raheem.
And until Andrew Luck is available, or someone out of the clear blue sky is available, that's better than Jameis. And right now, there's not many quarterbacks. There's no quarterback available that's better.
That you acknowledge, even you acknowledge he's not a complete quarterback yet.
He's not there yet. And here's what's the frustrating part about Jameis.
This is year 4 now.
Yeah.
And he ain't a rookie anymore.
Here's what is the frustrating thing about Jameis, and it's got to be driving Cutter crazy. It's got to be driving Jason Light crazy.
And Bajakian, the quarterback.
Right? I don't know what drives him crazy. I think the Devils, when they lose, the New Jersey Devils drives him crazy. But there is no football person that's worked with Jameis that doesn't come away blown away by his football IQ. As a human being, he's a smart guy. He had an academic scholarship to Stanford. They don't give those away to Tom, Dick, and Harry's at the bus stop.
You had one of those, didn't you, Kevin? Stanford University DeVry. It's an online course.
I was going to say junior college in Mississippi. Yeah. You get to be an intelligent person to get those. For whatever reason, that doesn't transfer. You know Cutter has told Jameis about the turnovers. You know it. We've seen it on Hard Knocks. Yet he continues to do it. He continues to do dumb things on the football field. Dumb things. And he's a bright guy. He's a smart guy. Why he continues to do that? To me, he's a project for a shrink. He's a term paper waiting to be written by a psychology major. Why is such a smart person, and by all information you get from people that work with Jameis, he's an intelligent guy, but he continues to do the same dumb things over and over.
Because football smarts are a different animal. It's a different animal. You know, I dare say that, you know, Ben Roethlisberger might not be a Rhodes Scholar, but he's got football smarts.
Mm-hmm. You always hear the cliche about book smart. People are book smart, but no common sense. Is that what this is?
Jameis got to get more football smart. Check down sometimes is the right play. Don't force things. Don't lock into a receiver. He gets into that habit a little bit.
Do you think
sometimes.
So?
I think so. I think that's what happened on the play that the linebacker drifted back into coverage and picked that ball off.
Well, the reason why I wonder about that, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I just don't know. But, you know, people say he locks in the receiver. Well, there was a clip that Fox, National Fox, the broadcast, the team, the network that broadcast the football games. It was, I believe, in Atlanta. They showed Jameis back in the pocket. He had all kinds of time. And he was surveying the field. You would have thought it was Joe Montana.
So he went through his progression.
Yeah, I mean, twice. You could see him. You could see his eyes going left to right, left to right. And then he settled down the middle pass that I think he completed. And so when people say he locks in and I see tape of that, I'm like, does he lock in sometimes? Does he lock in most of the time? Was that an anomaly that they showed the clip of him looking off the receivers?
Maybe he locks in at the inopportune time.
Which goes back to repeating the dumb stuff.
But Lee, I think it's incumbent on us to also add this. And you and I have watched them now for 3.5 years. Even the Jameis haters, the skeptics, have to say, begrudgingly, he's a hell of a lot more mobile than I thought he was coming out of Florida State.
I agree.
The word is he's running a 5.1 40. He can't move.
Yeah.
He's overweight. He's this, he's that. The guy moves very well, Lee. He's not Patrick Mahomes.
No.
But he moves certainly well enough to escape pressure.
He's not Eli Manning.
And he gets plenty of heat.
Yeah.
And he's dangerous outside the pocket. He's quicker than people think.
Mm-hmm.
Without his running yesterday, the Bucs would have been in a lot of trouble because
they were lost.
Peyton Barber went nowhere.
Yeah.
Absolutely nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Ronald Jones, he's starting to show a little bit.
A little bit. But you know what? And Steve, our famous partner in crime, Steve Isbitz, he wrote this. He's the one that started this last summer, and I piggyback.
He'll be back with us on the next podcast.
On Thursday, yeah. Steve did the research, and I kind of want to do a Monty Python here. You know, like, I warned you. Steve was the first guy to document Dirk Koetter's history with rookie running backs is not good. I'm not saying it's completely bad. Sketchy. I'll be polite. Sketchy. And so, like the Monty Python or Mo Howard, I warned you. Right now, it sure looks that way. Now, whether that's Ronald Jones' fault, whether that's a Koetter issue, whether it's a little bit of both, I don't know. But Ronald Jones is right now a very much a nondescript running back. I think that's fair to say.
I understand. He caught a 15-yard pass yesterday.
Oh, boy.
Nice to see. had a touchdown run.
Yes, he did.
He reached Peter.
Oh, boy.
But
and so did Jameis, too, by the way.
I think his workload's going to increase. I think it's going to increase. Not dramatically. I think they're still going to give Barber the bulk of it.
And Koetter did say that Barber is still the number one back.
They're making a point of working Jones in a little bit. They're working Vita Vea in now a little bit.
On defense,
We're still waiting for Alex Kappa. Benenox a work in progress, leading at right guard.
I'm ready to give up on him.
I don't think they have a lot of good options right there.
You're correct. They don't have any good options now. Who knows with the trade deadline? I mean, he's to the point now that couldn't Benenox be any worse than a guy off the street? I don't know. His pass blocking has never improved. It wasn't good last year. It's borderline atrocious right now. Maybe part of the reason why it's atrocious is he's logging so many snaps. He's a start. Run blocking is not so bad. He's not so bad. But we're in a passing league. And he's a virtual revolving door when it comes to pass blocking.
And Donovan Smith had his hands full with Mr. Garrett on Sunday.
That may have been his worst game.
Garrett's good.
That may have been his worst game. The game at New Orleans where he got benched was probably his worst. At New Orleans last year, he was terrible. He was hurt, too, so that was part of it. I don't think he was hurt yesterday. He got embarrassed yesterday, Donovan Smith did. And obviously, he's very sensitive to criticism. You found it out the hard way. You took a bullet for Joe Bucks, man. And so I'll have to talk to Donovan. At least, you know, he was kind enough.
But he's a tough guy.
He's a tough guy.
That injury, he was supposed to knock him out for a week or two. It didn't.
That's a great point. That's a tough guy. So, but, yeah, he had a rough day yesterday. He's human. You know, I don't think anybody accused him of being Anthony Munoz. So he had a rough day. Now,
on Thursday's podcast, we'll take a long look at the Cincy game.
Yes.
That's upcoming. Lee, you and I don't even want to think about what would have happened if they'd gone to Cincinnati and Carolina at 2-4.
Ooh.
Because I think that would have easily turned into 2-6.
And then you lost the team.
And then we're talking regime change.
Yeah.
So as DeMar Dotson and a couple other guys said, you can work with 3-3. You can work with it. Lee, in general terms, can they split the next two road games?
Sure.
Can they go to the midpoint 4-4? Still viable?
Yeah.
Still relevant?
They had the weapons to do that. You know, the Bucs, prior to yesterday, Well, yeah, I could include yes. If the Bucks had any kind of defense the first 5 weeks, right now they'd be 5-1.
You just want them to have an average defense.
Yeah, if they had an average defense, they'd be 5-1 right now. They'd be leading the division. They'd be 5-1 if they were the average defense. Now, was yesterday a fluke because the offense is so bad? You know, the Browns have improved defensively. But on offense, and I'm going to get this out of the way, you know I like Dirk Cutter. You know I don't want Dirk Cutter to get fired because that means the Bucks have a lousy season. I think Dirk Cutter's a good coach. But that nonsense at the end of the game, end of regulation, where they had the ball on the 45-yard line, two timeouts in his back pocket, Cutter had, and he runs the clock down to kick a field goal, a 40-yard field goal, with a shaky field goal kicker when you have DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, O.J. Howard, Cam Brate, and a number one overall quarterback in Winston who has shown an affinity to move the ball late in the game. And you take the ball out of their hands to put it in the hands of a shaky kicker to hopefully kick a 40-yard field goal? That's losing football. I'm sorry. That's losing football. And Dirk Cutter, I don't care what the percentages say. I don't care what his analytics people say. He ought to be ashamed of himself for doing that. And you know what? If they would have lost that game, they would have lost the team because Jackson, Evans, all those guys, like, what are you doing? You're taking the ball out of our hands for a freaking kicker? He would have lost. I think he would have lost the locker room. Dirk may get upset with me for saying that. I'm saying it. And I like you, Dirk. I like you. I want you to succeed. I want you to win. That was unexcusable. I don't care what he says. I don't care what he feels about it. That was terrible. That's losing football, man.
That's a hell of a speech to Kuemper. And you know what? On our next podcast, we're going to make sure the Kuemper sits in the front row for Dirk Cutter on Wednesday and ask a couple of questions and sees what kind of reaction he gets. But
he'll mock me, I'm sure.
Other than that, Lee, good job today. You and I, we were missing our third wingman, but he'll be back for the next podcast.
And I want to thank everybody for tuning in this podcast. I thank you for putting up with me. Steve is not here today. He's the professional. I'm the slug from Southern Illinois with a nasally accent, with a Southern Illinois accent, Midwestern twang. I dropped my G's.
By the way,
I apologize.
I picked the Bucks to win, so I'm back at the 3-3 mark on our predictions. Did you take the Browns?
No, I picked the Bucks to win, shockingly. And they won, shockingly. Usually when I pick them, they lose.
Good job, because Javier's watching that close.
Oh, yeah, he monitors. He's got a spreadsheet. So I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back Thursday with the Troika all together again. The Vatican, are they listening to you in the Vatican yet?
I've got two listeners.
There you go. You've made it, Ira.
One's in the bell tower.
You made it, Ira.